Welcome to Former Passion, episode 21. I want to thank you guys again for tuning in, as you have been doing so bi-weekly for about, we're going to be about a year in May. I'm going to get right into a few things before we get to the interview today. Last Patreon episode, we had a big uptick in people subscribing. I'm going to shout out each of you guys, for doing that. For anybody that wants an additional episode a month, you can subscribe to our Patreon at www.patreon.com/formofpassion. You're going to get an additional episode on the last Friday of each month, where it's not interview-based. It's more just kind of like topical and discussion. We've talked about the last one we did was about kind of like questionable releases in a band's career, and kind of determining whether those records were good or not. We've talked about perfect show lineups as kind of submitted to us by the listenership, and we've like done some show reviews. Shout outs to Liam Bruce, Ty Decker, who was our guest last time, who's in Division of Mind and occasionally Three Knee Deep, and I've seen him fill in for Never Ending Game. Pretty much if a band has three letters in their name, he's probably played in it. We got Ricky Kelly, Justin Manzi, is a local guy here. He's in this band Red Vision. We got Chris Bolt, a guy from the 757, close to here. Adrian Zamora, Sarah Addis, Mark Jones, who's also in Red Vision. He's filled in for some bands of mine, MAD and Breakaway in the past. He's also in the band Downfall. We've got Adam Maradino, Adam Bender, Ivy Mazza. If you're in the Virginia or Richmond area, she has a microblading place called Atelier. Stop by there if you're into it. David McConnell and Bailey Olinger. So thanks, guys, for subscribing. That's $2 a month for anybody that's interested, and you get that additional episode. While I'm here, I realize that there's two things that I'm involved in. Haven't done some plugging for the festival, but not so much for my other personal endeavor. I am in a band called Mutually Assured Destruction. We recently released an EP that was recorded right here at Studio F12. Two things on that. If you're looking to record music in the Virginia area, or you're willing to travel, or if you're from around here, contact myself or Sam, and I can get you in touch with the studio here to record. It's done great, great hardcore records out of this very room. That EP that my band just released came out from this room. You can pre-order that at www.edgewood-records.com. If you have not listened to that yet, it's called Fever Dream. Look it up on streaming services, and I appreciate it if you do so. And also for everybody interested in coming to United Blood 2020, tickets are looking great for that. It's about halfway sold out, if not more. Could be potentially at capacity year, and that's about a month away at the time that this podcast is coming out. So if you have not gotten your ticket and you want to come, please do so. Today we have on somebody that I'm super excited to have on, and I'm just so beside myself with the fact that this has, worked out, this opportunity. This is somebody that I've known for a long time in kind of like my duration in hardcore since I've been playing in bands and seeing bands. It is somebody that I believe is one of the best front men in the game in the history of the genre, and someone that, really believes in the foundational meanings and sort of like the spirit behind like what hardcore music is, and just, seeing the energy of this person live is in itself, not even related to the things that he has to say or the lyrics that he writes, but just seeing that in itself is just, not even as a frontman, but as a hardcore fan, is so inspiring. Today, I have on Mr. Walter Delgado. Thanks for coming on.
Thanks, man. No problem. It's been, 9 years?
God, it's the first time I ever met you. It's 2010.
2010, United Blood outside.
No, we met before that.
Was it at a show?
You played. I remember exactly what happened. You played the warehouse here. It was your first tour with Rotting Out.
Yeah.
And it was my old band Breakaway's second show. It was our first show in Richmond.
Okay.
It was y'all.
Was that Soul Search? Yeah.
It's been Lockdown played here, Swamp Thing, and we weren't on the flyer, but we played. And I remember that was the first
time. I remember that.
Yeah. And then, yes, the time outside United Blood where I couldn't get in, so I was selling my band's tapes on a table outside.
Yeah, I bought one. I remember this. Okay, so it's been about 10 years.
It's been about 10 years. Yeah.
Holy shit.
Yeah, well, the time flies, man.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's crazy how this thing kind of just preserves a moment.
Really? It really does. And I remember those moments so distinctly.
Yeah.
So distinctly.
I have a lot of those too, man.
I'm sure you do.
And then you look back and you realize, holy shit, that was 20 years ago.
Yeah.
Yeah, we had that conversation in the van earlier, like how this thing we've created, this scene that we all kind of like, you know, put our bricks in individually, just kind of freezes time.
It really does.
And you don't notice till your body really starts to crumble. You go, okay, sick. Like, you're going off to the same band you went off when you were 18. And shit just hurts a lot more now. And you're just like, holy fuck.
Doesn't feel the same.
You feel bigger. Yeah. And for some reason, that comes with some sort of confidence.
Yep.
But you breathe harder. And you're not as agile as you used to be.
Back hurts more.
Yeah. And then like, and then your pride hurts more because you're like, holy shit. And then I remind myself, I was like, yo, this scene is for young kids. This
for young people.
You know, so it makes sense. Like,
exactly.
It's not mine to keep.
Where were you born?
I was born in Nogales, Sonora, Mexico in 1986.
1986. Yeah. So that makes you how old?
That makes me 34 this 34. Month.
34. 34.
At the end of this month, I'll be 34.
Happy early birthday.
Fuck, dude.
So you were born in Mexico. Yeah. And like, map wise, since my geography in Mexico isn't great, where's
okay, it? Nogales is a border town, so okay. Half of it is in Arizona, half of it is in Mexico. I was born on the southern half, so when I was 3 years old, under circumstances with my biological father, my mom abandoned life there, and she was like, this is not the life I want to live,
right?
So we she paid for a coyote, which is a form of transportation a lot of Mexican immigrants use to get into the country, mm-hmm. which is usually a car or like sometimes a semi.
Okay.
It's basically like, I mean, not necessarily human trafficking, but like in the sense where it kind of is, because you're moving people from one point to another for money, mm-hmm. you know. But it's not in the sense where like people are like sex slaves or like stuff like that.
Right. Mostly, it's volunteer.
Yeah, it's volunteer. It's like, hey, it's like a desperate measure. Gotcha. Almost. So I was three. So in like 89, we took a coyote from Nogales all the way to Long Beach, California.
Do you have siblings?
Yeah, I have a younger brother.
Oh, of course. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. My younger brother, Austin, and my younger sister, who's, just 2 years younger than him. He's 7 years younger than I am. Emma. And, yeah, but we all, they have the same father, which is my stepfather.
Okay.
And I never met my biological father.
I was going to ask. I was like, so like, was it just you and your mom?
Yeah.
When you were younger?
Up until the age of seven.
Okay.
Until she got pregnant with my baby brother. It was basically just us.
Do you remember life in, like, why did you go specifically to, like, Long Beach?
Because my mother's brother, my uncle, lived in Long Beach. And okay. So he had connections to getting her job. Also giving us a place to live, mm-hmm. you know, it was family. So, you know, he did his best to kind of give us a home, you know, starting a new life in a new country. You know, my mom worked what now I realize was a sweatshop, you know. So I'd go over after like preschool and sit next to her while there's like 20 women just sewing, you know, all day.
What were they making?
Clothes. Okay. Clothes. So I do remember specifically it was like this Asian dude who was like kind of overseeing everybody. And it was just a lot of immigrants just kind of like just doing like factory work or like a lot of sewing machine work and stuff like that.
And you're living with your mother and your uncle at that time?
Yeah. Okay. My mother and my uncle and his girlfriend, baby mama, who also, they also shared four children.
Okay.
Yeah. And we were all kind of within the same age range by like a year, 2 years.
Did you get along with everybody?
Yeah, yeah. They basically showed me how to speak English. So like my first language was Spanish, so I had to learn how to speak English. Luckily I was prime age to pick up another language.
Young,
that young. So like, all they did, they were a TV family. Mm-hmm. So every evening. It was primetime TV, you know, the whole family eating their food. And she was the baby mom of my aunt. She was she's a Southern woman. Okay. So she was just like a bigger white woman, you know, very,
I know the type.
Yeah. Very, very embracive and loving and, you know, just making sure everybody ate well.
Where was she originally from?
She's from, I think they're from Georgia.
Okay.
But they live in Jacksonville.
Gotcha.
Now.
Gotcha.
And, that's basically how I learned English, you know, and I was just being fed I Love Lucy episodes and Nick at Night.
You were watching, yeah.
Yeah, Nick at Night and I Love Lucy and Sesame Street. And that was basically it. And, you know, I picked up English very, very fast. And I was transitioned from Spanish speaking classes to English speaking classes by first grade.
Okay. Yes. So you're still pretty young then.
Yeah.
When, how long were you in kind of like that living situation with your mom?
Not too long, actually.
Okay.
When I was 5 or 6 years old, something happened. I believe my uncle at the time was absolutely a gang member.
Mm.
So there was a lot of drugs in the house. Right. And I'm pretty sure there was a lot of like dealing and stuff like that, because always, like, as a kid you don't realize it, you just think it's your uncle's friends.
Yeah,
but there's a lot of shifty, like, looking people coming around the house asking for things, arguing, you know, stuff like that. Like, the house would always smell like weed. We just thought, I as a young kid, I just thought it was cigarettes,
right?
And my mom was kind of like, you can't be doing this in front of the kids, you can't be bringing this to the house, it's dangerous. That led to a very, very violent altercation where he put his hands on her and he kicked us out of the house. So at 6 years old, me and my mother are standing in front of the house crying with nowhere to go. And luckily my mom had a friend from the sweatshop that let us live with her in her one bedroom apartment.
Wow.
Yeah. So she really did us a solid. So my mom was working full time, going to English, like, speaking classes, you know, night to learn how to speak proper English in a new country, because she knew that was the best way for her to advance in any way. And while I was going to first grade, then at that time,
okay, so yeah, like about like six in there.
Oh, yeah.
Crazy. I mean, so, you know, like, she's there where like you're, you know, like, in school, you're with like your, you know, like the friend from the sweatshop and everything. Like, what, how long are you guys kind of like with this friend? And like, you know, like when, I guess, when eventually did she meet your stepfather?
That, during that whole time, mm-hmm. they had just started talking.
Okay.
I think there was like that dating period where, you know, they're still feeling things out and whatnot. 'Cause soon after, probably, I want to say less than 6 months living with this friend, we moved in with his family.
Oh, okay.
So he still lived with his parents, and they had a bigger bigger house. And so we moved in with them. And then I went to a whole new school in San Pedro. We moved to San Pedro.
Gotcha.
Which was right over the bridge from Long Beach to San Pedro. It's just like one bridge away.
Okay.
Probably like a 15-minute drive, if
all right. So and, same area, sure.
Same area.
Yeah.
And things got very confusing, because as a child, I was like, oh, cool, a father figure. Like, this can be very exciting. This is cool. This is new. This is hopeful, you know?
Yeah.
And so, but we went from this very festive home where a Southern woman loves celebrating Christmas and happy birthdays mm-hmm. and Thanksgiving, and we had potlucks and barbecues, to now transitioning to living with Jehovah's Witnesses.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That's a staunch contrast.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, yeah. So now I wasn't allowed to watch any TV.
Damn.
Well, and not any TV, but like, things were monitored now.
Right.
There was no Power Rangers, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. No, I was stuck watching fucking The Andy Griffith Show.
Yeah.
Matlock.
yeah.
I don't even think I could watch. Yeah, Perry Mason. Yeah. I couldn't even watch Happy Days.
Damn.
All yeah. Right. So it was like okay. It was pretty strict. Yeah. It was a lot of Judge Judy. And
like my mom watched
and Murder She Wrote.
Oh, mom. Yeah, you were listening just to my mom's like favorite shows when I was a kid.
Yeah.
I saw the same.
Yeah,
shit.
Yeah. It was yeah. Like I'm like, what the fuck, man?
Yeah.
So you know. And then there was a very, very weird period where I didn't know really what was going on. I was very confused because my parents moved out of the house to an apartment in Long Beach.
Okay.
But they left me behind.
Oh.
So I wasn't sure what was going on or why they didn't want me there. Mm. So I started feeling a bit neglected and just kind of like unwanted.
Yeah, as would anybody.
Yeah. And then so, but I would go get to visit them like kind of like on these weekends. But I don't know if my mom thought it was better that I was raised, you know, by these Christians, so-called, or whatever.
Did you ever talk to her about it?
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah, we've spoken about it since. And she said, I wanted to, but I really don't remember
that. You
don't
remember that?
Yeah, I really don't remember putting myself in that situation.
Right.
So now I'm, like, going to these Jehovah's Witness congregation things 3 times a week, you know, being like force reading the Bible.
How old are you?
At this point, I'm still 6.
Oh, you're still young. Okay.
Yeah, well. I'm still a kid, man. I'm still I'm still figuring out life.
Okay.
You know, and I'm still going to a new school where I have no fucking friends. You know, yeah. I'm not allowed to have friends because there anybody outside of the church was considered worldly.
Oh.
Yeah. Very culty. You know what I mean?
Sounds like it.
Yeah, very, very culty. Where it was like they kind of try to keep you in this pocket. Mm-hmm. It was all Christian based, so there's still, you know, the stories of Jesus and like the traditional Bible stories and whatnot.
Right.
It was just a bit more, I want to say, strict in the sense of like, oh, well, Jesus didn't celebrate Christmas or Thanksgiving, so we won't. Which I guess in theory that's what. You're trying to be a Christian. You want to be a follower of Christ, do as Christ did.
Which does make sense.
Which does make sense. But it's whatever. I'm fucking 6, dude.
Yeah,
buy me a fucking cake.
Like, let me have Christmas. Let me have a birthday.
Let me have a fucking birthday. At least celebrate my life once a year.
Please.
Like, come on, man. Just because some broad beheaded some dude in the Bible on her birthday doesn't mean I'm going to go do the same fucking thing. You know what I mean? And honestly, around that time, one of those weekends, this was a very, very severe turning point in my life. I went over to my parents' house, to the apartment, and there was a lot of arguing and a lot of yelling, and I didn't know what was going on. I was just like, oh, okay, like, they're angry, they're upset. And my mom was pregnant, and I was very stoked because I was like, sick, I'm going to have a little brother. Like,
right.
This is going to be awesome. Like, another person like I can share my life with.
Especially because you probably feel isolated at the time. With, like, you don't have like,
I was always kind of a loner.
Yeah.
Like, you know, I was always very detached because I was, at this point, we're constantly moving already.
Yeah, I was about to say, you've moved a lot.
Yeah, like, so I couldn't even establish friendships or really get to know people. You know, I literally lived my whole life in front of a TV or in front of movies.
Right.
I was kind of just placed there. So I lived in this weird fantasy world with these, like, standards that were created by directors I've never met from these films I've watched over and over. You know, it's fucked up.
Yo, man, I feel you, because I spent a lot of time as a kid in like kind of like in front of TV and watching movies and stuff, and it was almost like I get what you're talking about. I almost like developed this like code based off of just what I was
films.
What I was watching.
The way I kiss the, you know, the women in my life are based off fucking. What, Ghost?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Are based off, you know, When Harry Met Sally. Right. You know, like these movies that have been romanticized. You know, I romanticized honorable deaths in Westerns.
Same.
You know what I mean? Or self-sacrificing movies, because that's what the hero does.
That's what the hero
like does. These weird
the establishment
roles.
Of good and evil.
Yeah.
And, yeah, I'm yeah, right
yeah.
there with you.
But also very unrealistic.
True.
You know, because obviously it's all cinematic. And so I'm slowly building these, like, morals no longer based off the Bible or any other religion. These are based off characters that for the most part don't even exist.
Yeah.
And I think that was important. So now that I'm with my family, I'm visiting, I'm watching TV, because I feel like that's my safe space at this point.
Yeah.
They're arguing. my mother's pregnant. This was the first time I heard my mother scream outside of when things were violent the last time since we got kicked out. So that anytime now I relate with my mom screaming to physical harm.
Yeah.
So I ran into the room. My stepfather locked the or closed the door behind me. And this was the first time I saw him hit my mother.
Whoa.
And I remember not so much being afraid for her as much I was about my baby brother who wasn't born yet.
Mm.
So I was like, this isn't good. You know, this isn't, this is all wrong.
Right.
Like, this is not what good guys do.
It's true.
You know, based on the history of film.
Yeah, what you've been seeing, that's not what happens.
This is not good. And then I go back, I call the only person I really can call, which is my grandmother, who's, she comes, they argue, we leave, we go to my grandma's house, my mom comes back.
So your grandmother was in the States as well?
Well, no, sorry, his mother.
Okay.
It's his parents. Gotcha. So I kind of took her in as, like,
my that makes sense, yes.
So she was basically the go-to as, like, a guardian when I didn't know what to do when it came to violence in the home.
Right.
So, because I was taught at my other house with my uncle, never call the police. Don't talk to the police. They don't like us. They will mistreat us. And at that time, I'm, what, six?
Young.
So, you know, the 92 riots.
Yeah,
so it's you right know, around there. Don't trust the police.
Yeah, especially you know? Like where you're living and everything that's like happening down the street. Yeah.
All the riots popped off and all that stuff. So, you know, essentially police were always bad since I can remember.
Right.
And so I called my grandmother, and then this starts this cycle of back and forth of my mom being in this abusive relationship. You know, that's the wheel started turning.
Yeah.
And then I'm seven, and all of a sudden the fighting and the beatings start to carry over to me, you know, as a child. So then now there's not only domestic abuse, there's now physical child abuse.
Child abuse, yeah.
And there's a lot of fear at first, but I remember being angry. Yeah. And that was the first time I've really felt anger. And it's unfortunate because it never really left, you know.
Yeah.
And then another really bad altercation happened. My brother was born, and he was still a baby. Must have been like 3-4 months, if that. And somehow, I find myself in a women's shelter. You know, I'm 7 years old, and I'm in this shelter for battered women and children.
Right.
Because now I can't go to school because my stepdad's looking for us.
Damn.
And looking for my mother. Mm. And
so
I don't know where I am.
You're still like 7, 8 around that time?
I'm seven.
Seven?
I am seven years old at this point. And so I do what most kids do. I will fantasize. The shelter had all these movies. So I did what I do best. And I just chewed through every fucking movie that was there.
Yeah.
It was a lot of very women empowering movies. Like What's Love Got to Do with It, the Ike and Tina movie, or like Sleeping with the Enemy with Julia Roberts.
Oh, yeah.
Like these old women in power.
I got the total vibe.
Yeah. So I'm just running through these bad boys, you know what I mean? At the same time, I'm going to a classroom that's private for all the kids in the shelter, and we're all different ages. It goes like from 15 to like 5, in one classroom, and there's one teacher, and she's like, she has to teach us individually, so it's like we're not really picking anything up.
Yeah, that's really difficult to do.
Yeah, it's very difficult because everybody's in these terrible situations where, you know, some kids have been sexually violated or some kids have been terribly abused or some neither but are just caught in this chaotic environment that they just don't know right from wrong or what to do. You know, they're just lost. And I'm in that mix, and I'm like, oh, shit, I don't give a fuck about math. You know, the fuck do I give a fuck about, you know, division?
Right.
You know, like, I don't care.
Yeah.
You know, I'm just trying not to feel anything at this point. And then I guess at some point I fell in love with comic books in seventh grade. So I was stealing these. We had a grocery store nearby. So I was stealing these random comic books, these old Wizard magazines and stuff like that. You know. So now this whole other fantasy world has been created for me.
You said you were how old when this was happening?
7.
Okay, so you're stealing the comics when you're 7.
Yeah.
Okay, gotcha.
Yeah. So I'm like, oh, cool. The X-Men. You know what I mean? Like Spider-Man, Batman, the Hulk. Like these very traditional characters.
The classics. Yeah.
Yeah. That I'm just like, okay, sick. Like, this is my world. These are my fucking people now. And what I'm about to tell you is actually on the new record. Not to do some weird plug or anything,
but by all means.
It was the most important event that I have ever spoken about recently. For a long time, I didn't think about even opening this door.
Yeah.
But there was another girl. She was about 13, 14 years old. And she had comic book collections, these Fleer cards that they used to have back in the day. Well, Marvel did a series of them. So they had these like weird, it was basically like Pokemon cards, but for like comic book characters.
Okay. Yes. I remember. Yeah. Remember those? I remember these.
And
yeah,
they
sure.
had stats on the back.
Yep.
And
I remember these for sure. Yeah.
And then it'll be like, oh, introduced issue, blah, blah, blah. So and so. Some of them were foil. Some of them were just regular. Anyways. And she had a lot of these cards. And it was a very, now it was traumatic. At the point, it was a very confusing experience. So she lured me into the room and she molested me. And as a kid, you think, oh, this is what people in movies do?
Yeah, so this is normal.
So this, I believe, is normal.
Right.
But why am I feeling so uncomfortable?
Right, right.
Why is this, there's this weird feeling in my stomach that I'm doing something very, very bad?
Yeah.
And then once I was told to leave the room, I remember feeling completely angry again.
Yeah.
Like, even though it didn't feel like your traditional, like, sexual assault, you know, because it was technically she was still younger than an adult. But, like, I look back, I was like, if a 15-year-old kid molested my 7-year-old son, I'd flip the fuck out.
Yeah, of course.
You know, but I'm 7. I don't fucking know anything.
Yeah, you don't know.
Everything's still new.
And, based on what you've told me about your life so far, is that there's a lot of it's a lot of inconsistency. So there's not a lot other than the television. And, you're moving around a lot. Like, you've got, like, different, like father figure type people, like, in and out of your life and everything. So it's like you're not, you know, I feel like you're not getting sort of, you feel bad in the moment, but you don't really know why, you know, kind of thing. So I get it. I see.
Because naturally, you know, I feel like your body understands it's being violated.
Yeah.
But your mind thinks, well, we've seen this before in movies, in public, with, you know, people like making out in public and stuff like that. You know, obviously it was a little bit more severe than just making out.
Mm.
And so it was very confusing. But I remember once again feeling this anger. And I think around that time I started to build these very bad characteristics. I started to lash out, you know, and I did a lot of things I really regret, where I was harming animals. I was just kind of inflicting pain on things.
I'm sure you felt out of control. So you get control from stuff like that.
Yeah,
you know?
It was. I think that was it. That was like, I was just projecting.
Yeah.
You know, like, I didn't know. You know, my grandmother caught me harming one of her cats.
Yeah.
She freaked out. And then so I had to stop harming animals because now I was referred to as a monster.
Yeah.
I also didn't even know why I was harming animals. I just knew that I was getting some sort of satisfaction from it.
Right.
You know, knowing it was not good, not healthy, like, especially knowing my grandmother was flipping out and that this is not a good thing.
Yeah.
So all that happened within like the same year. You know what I mean?
Crazy year. You know?
And then now we're moving to another shelter because my stepfather found out where we were at. So now I'm in another shelter.
Yeah.
I was more of a suburban shelter in this one. So it was like quieter. It was a smaller shelter. There was like 3-4 families in it.
Okay.
Very private. Very isolated. I'm in a new school again. This is like school 4.
Yeah, but sir.
And And at this point, I'm just tired. I'm just, you know, I realize it was depression. And back then, you just feel lonely. You know what I mean? You just
being that young, you don't know.
You don't know yet. Yeah. You don't understand the weight of those feelings yet. So, you know, I just hung out by myself, kept stealing shit from the grocery stores to read, you know, kept watching movies, did what I do best. Mm-hmm. I was sad at the fact that I could never have friends or that I didn't deserve friends. I started to build that bad boy started creeping in at a young age.
Right.
Don't know what happened. My mom, obviously now that I'm an adult, I see she had a lot of issues with being a very severe codependent and whatnot, or being manipulated.
I can see that based on what you've been telling me. Yeah.
Yeah. She was, you know, being manipulated. Little did I know that it hadn't come out yet, but my stepfather was a drug addict, was an alcoholic. He was just very good at hiding it at the time, whether it was alcohol or heroin, you know, or meth. So all that started kind of coming to the surface. And then, you know, we moved back in with him.
Oh, God.
I'm sorry. I won't do it again. Yeah. You know, the same rhetoric. Mm-hmm. Boom. You know, 2-3 days in, we're getting beat. I'm hiding in the closet with my baby brother. You know, my mom's pregnant again.
Yeah.
You know, like, it just becomes...
like a cycle.
You know? It becomes a cycle, and it becomes normalized. Like, you think, okay, this is life now. Like, this is...
just what it's going to be.
This is this must be how it is for everybody, right? Like, this is how life is, right? And so you, at a young age, I was starting to accept these things as just being normal. You know, this chaos, this just no control, no direction, just the sporadic movement, the constant moving away, the constant not getting close to people, these severe moments of fight or flight, you know. Physical pain is no longer really an issue. It's just something you tolerate now.
You've gotten used to it.
Yeah, you get used to it. And then, where were we? And then we're in San Bernardino, California, in a trailer park. And I remember being very depressed, watching the Disney Channel or something.
Right.
I didn't have friends. This is third grade now, so I was about eight.
So eight, yeah.
Yeah. And... it got really bad. It was a really bad one that day. I was watching TV. My mom screamed. I ran into the room. I mean, I don't know. I honestly don't even know why I ran into the room. I just think because I was so obsessed with superheroes at the time. I thought that was my job. Like, you know, that's my mother. That's my job.
Just to do something.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah.
I don't know what I'm going to do when I get there. Whether I play the shield, you know.
Something. Yeah.
You know, it's one less hit on her.
Right.
You know, the way I looked at it.
Right.
And her face was pretty swollen at that point. And she told me one time that was the day she thought she was going to die. And so she didn't say anything except grab your brother and run. It's 9 p.m.
Night, sure.
In a... desolate trailer park with like maybe 8 other trailers and one manager. So I'm grabbing my baby brother. I don't know what I'm doing, man. I'm fucking 8 years old.
Yeah, you're 8 years old.
I have a 1 year old in my arm.
Yeah.
And I'm looking for the manager. I knock. Fucking nothing. I'm hiding under behind a trash can, almost under a trailer. I see my stepfather drive by, so I think he left, or he went to go look for us, or, you know, find me, or whatever.
Something.
So I ran back home, because she wasn't in the car. She was washing her face, she grabbed her bag, and we both went back to the manager's house. We hid behind a piece of plywood, like this like, almost like 4x6 sheet of wood that was just next to the trash can. Till the manager came home. Oh, man, it felt like a lifetime.
I bet.
And we called, the manager showed up. We called my grandmother, and we went back to her place. She came to get us. There was the whole fucking restraining order and all that shit.
But all legal stuff, yeah, sure.
But I knew at a young age that it was all useless.
Right.
You know, because what good is a restraining order when you're fucking dead?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. And like, this person does not seem like someone that's going to be adhering to the law of a restraining
order. Obviously not.
You know?
And then we go back to the third shelter in downtown L.A. And that one wasn't so bad, only because I think it was getting normal.
I mean, yeah. I mean, like, at this point, it's just like, this just seems like a part of life, like you said.
Yeah. Yeah, that's really it. Like, at that, what, we're on school six now?
Yeah. I mean, school shelter six. Three, school six. You're like, what, eight?
Yeah.
Like
8 years old. So I've just learned to just kind of like live in my own head.
Yeah.
For the most part, at least at that age. Didn't really know how to make friends. Didn't really know how to really talk to anybody. No, all I knew was I would talk to kids about Casablanca. Like, why the fuck does an 8-year old know so much about Casablanca? You know what I mean? Like, yeah. Oh, yeah, you ever seen Goodfellas? It's like, no, man, I watch fucking Power Rangers. Yeah. I'm like, oh, never mind. You know, oh, you ever seen Predator, dude? So, oh, my dad won't let me watch that.
When I was 6 years old, favorite movie.
Yeah, it was came out in 1986, the year I was born. So I'm very
love that. I like the second one a little bit more, which is weird. But
with Danny Glover, you fucking
love
me?
That one. But I was like 5 or 6 when I saw it though. So like I don't know the difference. I like that it was in a city as opposed to the jungle.
It was in L.A. like futuristic L.A.
Yeah, I loved it.
No, God, it's garbage. but you know, like I couldn't connect with kids my age,
right?
Because I was watching like grown ass films and like, you know, oh, do you like Spielberg movies? Like a fucking 8-year old doesn't know what a Spielberg movie is. He's like, oh, you mean like Jurassic Park?
Yeah.
Like that's as far as they know. You know what I mean? It's like, oh, you ever seen The Shining, man? It's like, no, like
they don't know Kubrick.
No, like, dude, I'm watching like Big Bad Beetleborgs on Fox. Like, I don't know what the fuck you're talking about.
Beetleborgs, yeah.
Yeah. You know, so I'm just like, so I was like, I just like, oh cool, time to keep my fucking mouth shut now.
Yeah.
And I just kind of just remained by myself. Stayed in the shelters, didn't really do anything except read comics and watch movies. And then before I knew it, same shit. We're back with the old man in a new place in San Pedro. And my sister's born. One of those years, we lived in a garage. I was kind of transformed into this back house.
Okay.
You know, so it was like one bathroom and like these awkward rooms. And same shit, like the abuse, the beatings, the arguing. You get older, you start to kind of like turn it off.
Yeah.
Like you start to like disassociate.
Well, this is normalized for you now.
Yeah. Yeah. It's normal. You know, it's constant fight or flight at this point. You know, like you're just, oh, he's home. All right.
Be on guard.
Yeah. Be on guard. Be ready. Be ready to grab a bag that's already packed.
Yeah.
And take off, you know. My brother's crawling at this point. He's like 2-3 years old.
Yeah.
He gets it to hold some rat poison, unfortunately. Oh. Yeah. And because we had rats at the time. So he gets rushed to the hospital. I'm only sharing this because this was the only time I felt like anybody ever understood what I was going through, even though he was too young to really probably remember any of those things or a lot of the violence. In my head, he was there for all of it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So I was like, this is my dude. This is my brother.
So I mean, you don't have friends.
I have no fucking friends.
This is it. Like,
so if he goes, what do I do? Right. I'm abandoned. I'm alone. Because my mom can't seem to learn, you know, at this point. She can't seem to, like, figure her shit out. So now we're in a constant cycle of her bad cycle.
Yeah.
You know? And I don't want to build resentment for my mother because as an adult, it's difficult. I have had my resentments and I dealt with them. But
this is your story. You know, this is what it was.
Yeah, you know? Essentially. Unfortunately. And he made it through. They pumped his stomach and whatnot. But I remember being completely terrified. Like, wow, like, I'm really going to be alone now.
Yeah.
If he goes, like, fuck it, dude. Like, I got nothing. And he came out fine, which was awesome.
It's great.
In that year, we moved into the projects, and which was only a few blocks away from where we were living.
Okay.
So, like, the neighborhood wasn't crazy or anything, But it was the first time I was going to be in one place for a long time.
Okay. And you're what, eight
this
still?
This is now 9 years old.
Nine, okay.
So I'm in fourth grade, and I'm going to a new school, and it's going to be consistent now.
Okay.
Granted, my living situation is very deep in the ghetto of our town.
Yeah.
In the mid
San Pedro?
Yeah.
Okay.
In the mid-90s, which was a very bad time for any ghetto in Los Angeles.
Yeah, I bet.
And, but it gave me a little bit of consistency. You know what I mean? I was, I started drinking. Because at one point, my stepdad was in charge of me when my mom was working late. So, actually, this is a very ironic situation. He took me to AA meetings.
Okay.
Because he was constantly falling on and off.
Yeah, you're telling me that.
Of his sobriety.
Yeah.
And so he would, I got to go to a meeting. So I'd go with him. I didn't know what it was. You know what I mean? I just thought.
I'm going someplace.
Yeah. And I hear these dudes, grown men, talking about these like war stories about their drinking and stuff like that. And as an 8-year-old, just desperate for any type of like advice, all I heard was, when I drink, I fight. I defend myself.
Yeah. So you're associating that with.
So I'm like, oh, well, maybe if I drink, I can defend myself.
Yeah, I can fight. I can defend myself. Yeah.
You know?
Right.
And then they also said, you know, I felt unstoppable. Like these little words that just kind of stood out more than normal.
Right.
Almost like they were glorifying alcohol, at least the way I received it.
Mm-hmm.
Not saying that that's what they were doing, you know, but.
It's how you took it in, though.
That's how I
took
it in.
Based on what you've already experienced.
Yeah. So I'm like, oh, so this is like some sort of like elixir.
Yeah.
To like being superhuman, right?
Right.
And so I started drinking way too early.
Yeah.
You know.
I mean, that's super, like what, you're nine, like 8 or 9, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. About late 8, early 9. And I'm getting at home drunk by myself when my parents aren't home. I'm stealing from my mom just to go play like arcade so I don't have to be home.
Right.
You know, I'm hanging out with the kids in the neighborhood who are the only friends I really have at this point, you know, and all their brothers are in gangs.
Yeah.
You know, so that's really all I know at that point. I was never a gang member or anything like that. You know, I was just always that kid.
Yeah.
That's just around it all.
Right.
You know what I mean? And school was consistent. Same shit. Different year. You know. Actually, for a while, it was good. His sobriety was good. And it was quiet. And I think my stepfather felt bad for a lot of the things.
Hmm.
And so he tried to take me to movies. You know, he took me to the theater and stuff like that. We like movie hop and stuff like that. And I thought, oh, wow, like, it's over.
Oh.
This is
Yeah, but
cool.
See, this is the first time you've brought anything up where it's like something positive. So what's happening with that?
Yeah, yeah. And it's unfortunate because I think back and I don't find a lot of positive moments in my life.
Yeah.
Prior to the age of 18. Shit, prior to the age of maybe even 19. And I was stoked. I was like, cool, like this dude is trying. I'm still always kind of weary. You know what I mean? But I'm like, oh, this could be fun. And then there was a really bad relapse.
Mm.
And once again, it was, I think the kids in the neighborhood knew what was going on. You know, I was getting hit. My mother was getting hit. And there was always a lot of yelling and violence in my home. My dad would leave for a while. He would come back. He was a truck driver.
Yeah.
So he got really hooked on like meth and speed at the time because it was big with truck drivers.
That's big truck driving world for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And
stuff.
So there was, you know, it was a lot going on, man. And, so I just started hanging out with a bunch of just hoodlum kids and shit like that. You know what I mean? Skateboarding, going to backyard punk shows and like metal shows.
And that's like, you know, like how are you finding that? Is it just things that are happening in the neighborhood?
That was accidental.
Okay.
I was skating around and it was these random shows. I didn't know what it was. To me, it was all heavy metal.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know what I mean? And then somewhere in sixth grade.
So you're like, what, 11?
Yeah. Okay. Somewhere in sixth grade. Music started to become a part of my life.
And like, you know what's so crazy is that through doing this podcast, what I've discovered is that no matter what anybody's background is, for the most part, right around that age, 11, sometimes a 10, but 12, everybody seems to start finding stuff like right then.
Yeah, we had, it started off with like hip hop, like Tupac and stuff like that. And then it kind of.
So like probably what, like 96, 97?
97.
Okay.
Yeah, 97, man. And it was mostly radio shit. So it was a lot of gangster rap, you know? And because I could relate to that more, being around the people that I was around, because all their older brothers listened to it.
You're used to it. Yeah,
and shit like that. And somewhere in middle school, I met these kids that were definitely not like the other kids.
Yeah.
These kids with like, they were basically the goth kids and the metalhead kids.
Okay, sure.
And so, you know, one of them had like a trench coat and another kid.
Catching this late 90s vibe.
Yeah, had like had a Manson shirt under school shirt.
Uh-huh.
And they took a liking to me. They were super cool. They let me borrow like all these CDs and, you know, so I'm falling into bands like Slipknot, you know what I mean? Like Korn and...
That stuff's popping right
there. Limp Bizkit, Rage Against the Machine, Marilyn Manson, Nine Inch Nails, Smashing Pumpkins, Soundgarden. Just all at once, just in my face.
Right.
So aggressive music was now a thing.
Yeah.
You know, it was like, yeah, this is where I'm going now. This is the direction my life is going.
Well, probably now. Sounds like how you feel.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. 100%. You know, it was that anger that just always sat in my belly.
Yep.
You know, and for the most part, a lot of it was just to smother like the depression, because when you're depressed, it's hard to defend yourself.
Yeah.
And I couldn't be depressed. I couldn't allow myself.
You don't got the energy.
Yeah. So I had to be angry.
Yeah.
And it's so much easier to be angry, especially being a fucking male in the ghetto. You know what I mean? That same summer, I started to normalize a lot of things. It was the summer of 98.
Okay.
Some dude got shot in front of my yard in the middle of the night. The gunshots woke me up, so I'm peeking out the window. And I just see him just pouring out the back of his head. Now he's breathing on my lawn, and it was like a dirt lawn, so it wasn't really taken care of. And then I see him stop. And then my mom's like, "Are you okay? What happened?" I was like, "Someone's dead. Like someone's dying." So I saw this dude crawl to complete stop to completely just not alive.
Yeah.
And with probably 2 months later, one of the local drug dealers was getting chased by cops, and they caught him. They put him in the back seat in our parking lot, which is literally 15 feet from my door. And they're looking through the bushes because they think he tossed the stash during the run.
Yeah.
And didn't realize that he had swallowed it. So the balloon burst in his belly, and like 10, 15 of us are watching him OD in the back of the cop car.
Damn.
And we're not yelling, but like the older girls are yelling and the moms are yelling that he's ODing, and the cops are, don't give a shit. You know what I mean? Okay. So they go back and they go, "Oh shit. He's already blue." You know what I mean? He's done.
Yeah.
And so that's like the second body.
And what are you like, what, 12, 13?
12.
Okay.
Yeah, 12. And then towards the end of summer, I remember we're like, fuck, school's coming. Let's go to the beach. We got to go to the beach as much as possible. So we'd all wake up like around 7 a.m. And like grab our towels and like get on our bikes and probably ride our bikes a good 20 blocks, to the local beach and whatnot. And we were waiting for our friend, and in the backyard in the project isn't really, it's just like a patch of grass.
Yeah.
Like you can go in and out between these apartments, and it's super like, there's not really a backyard. It's just yards with no fences.
Gotcha.
And there was a cop there, and he had taped off a piece of his backyard. So we're like, oh shit, like, did something pop off in his place or something? And you couldn't recognize her. But you can tell she was younger because she was wearing a school outfit, mm-hmm. like the navy blue pants with the collar blue shirt, okay. or white shirt,
yeah,
with like a blue little cardigan.
Right.
So she was probably our age, maybe a couple years older, so like still a young teen.
Yeah.
Her face was just beat to a pulp. Like, damn. And her breast was exposed, but it was had been slashed. So they had slashed her breast and her ribs, which now that I think back, she was probably just stabbed a bunch.
Yeah.
Her legs were just bruised to fuck, like they hit her with bats or something. And right. her leg was like, it looked deformed because it was so broken.
Yeah.
And there was like probably like 8 of us just like trying to figure out who this girl is. The cop's telling us to fuck off. But the coroner's not there, so he really can't do anything because
he can't touch it.
He can't cover it or even cover the body because he didn't have anything.
Right.
And so we're just like, oh, wow. Like, so drive-bys, drug dealings, shootings, death. Like, that was just normal shit in Los Angeles.
Every day.
Yeah. It's just, I don't know. That's why, like, I don't really get too scared of anything anymore.
Yeah, I mean, especially if that's like your entire upbringing, like, yeah, I mean, I would imagine that like certain things don't affect you like how they would just the average person, you know? Yeah.
And that was that. And then that following year, my stepdad was on a lot of meth or crack. I think it was crack. Because my mom kicked the door open down to our bathroom, and it smelled really weird.
So bad, yeah.
Yeah, crack. It smelled really weird.
They both smelled bad, but
yeah. And the pipe was black, and he was trying to dump it in the trash can, in the toilet, and it didn't flush. And it was just like, I was just like, at that point, I was just like confused. I'm like, dude, like, just leave. Like, why do you keep coming back?
Yeah, at that point, I'm sure you're more. I feel like. You have more awareness, more cognizance of like your environment, and at that point, it's you're not like a little kid where you're like, "Oh, this is just how it is." At this point, you've experienced the world a little bit more, so yeah, you're probably like, "Yo, like, this is not going to change."
Yeah,
like you know, no, like
this is the way things are now.
Like you know, it's like you need to fuck off from this situation with this person because he's always going to be like this. Yeah. You know,
and I don't know why my mom thought it was a good idea, for him to try to. Reconnect with me or something. So yeah. She's like, oh, he's going to be picking you up from school. He's not working for a while. So like, maybe he can help you with your homework or whatnot. I'm like,
were you like 13 or something?
Yeah.
Or?
I'm like 13 years old and you know, I'm waiting at school for him to pick me up. We got out at 3, dude. It's like 5:30.
Oh, he ain't coming.
And I'm like, what the fuck? And I looked down the block and I was like, oh, there's his car. So I was like, oh, shit, maybe he thought I was going to walk this way or something. You know, I don't know. So I went to the car. This motherfucker's nodded off, fucking still bleeding from his arm.
Shit.
And I'm like, are you okay? And he's like, oh, I just slammed. I don't know what the fuck that means.
Yeah.
You know, I'm fucking 13.
Yeah.
I was like, what do you mean? Like, the car doesn't work? Like, did you crash or something? He's like, nah, man, heroin. And I'm just like, I look at his arm and I look at his eyes and I'm like, yeah, fuck this dude.
Yeah.
So I just walked home, right. You know? So that was like the impression of my stepfather as a teenager. And I remember getting home and I told my mom, I was like, yeah. She's like, what? I was like, yeah. So they start arguing and I'm just over it. So I just kind of like shut everything out, put some music on. Very fucking angsty 13-year-old,
right? Yeah, you know.
And I'm in the shower, and I get out, and the screaming's just worse, but it's not to the point of, like, physical violence yet.
It's just them yelling at each other?
Yeah.
Right.
And I was going to grab my skateboard and just fuck off for a minute. And I heard that breaking point when my mom screamed, and that is... such a piercing sound when you've heard it so many times. And so instantly I kick into fight mode.
Right.
I was like, oh my God, what's going on? I grab a screwdriver that I used for my skateboard. I kick the door open. I'm a little bigger now.
Yeah, so you're getting like to be like a human. Like you're like an adult. Yeah. You're not like an adult, but you're like yeah. a person. Of,
and yeah. he was hitting her, and he looked back at me, and he saw what I had, and I leaped at him, and he jumped back on the bed, and I'm just swinging. I'm just swinging for the fences, dude. And I stabbed his legs a few times because he kept, like, pushing back up against the bed, trying to get away from me. I'm at the edge of the bed.
Yeah.
And I remember I was like, that's it. This is it. Like, it ends today.
Yeah.
I was just sheer desperation.
And violence is all you've known. So it's like eventually at this point, it's like, you're like, if you're going to be like this, I'm going to be like this.
Yeah. You know? It's like, I'm done.
Yeah.
Like, I'm over it. Like, we're going. And my mom screamed at me and told me to stop. And that was a very confusing thing. I was like, what do you mean?
That would have hurt me, honestly.
I was like, what do you mean?
Defending her.
Yeah. You know? I was like, what do you mean stop? And she looked at me like I did something so wrong. And I remember just leaving the house. He took off, first of all fucked up. He was like, fuck this, because he probably felt like he was going to die at some point.
Yeah.
And I was heartbroken. You know, I was like, holy shit, you still love this man. And I was like, oh my God, like, you're fucked.
Yeah.
And in that process, you fucked us. And then I really felt alone.
Yeah, because I mean, at this point, you're probably thinking the choices of this other person have put me in a position of danger for pretty much the duration of my life.
Yeah.
You know, and so then it's probably you're realizing that moment right when she is telling you, like, you're like, oh, like she's upset with you for defending her. You're like, what? You probably feel completely isolated and alone, like, you know.
And then I'm 14.
And
this was the year I decided to stop drinking. This was the year someone handed me a Camo CD.
Yeah.
That said Beyond Repair on it. And they said, check this out. You like heavy shit.
Who is this person?
This kid named Dustin. He doesn't go to shows. We don't even talk anymore. But he was a very important person at a very bad time in my life. And I was like, oh, what is he? He's like, oh, it's hardcore. And I'm thinking, oh, hardcore what?
Yeah, like what are they? Yeah.
He's like, no, it's just hardcore. I'm like, okay. You know, because I was, like, into bands like Hatebreed, thinking Hatebreed was a metal band.
Especially at that time.
Perseverance came out.
Perseverance came out. They're definitely in the world of, like, both.
Yeah. Right. That was, like, them entering this metal world.
Yes.
And so I was like, oh, cool. Like, I like Slipknot. I like Hatebreed. I love Korn.
Yeah.
Like, I love all this shit. You know, Suicidal Tendencies. It's all cool to me.
We were talking earlier in the car, that's a little more mainstream. It's like on the radio at least. Like,
yeah,
you know,
yeah,
so
yeah.
You can, yeah.
It's accessible.
Right.
And so he shows me this CD, and one song in, I'm like, what the fuck is this?
Yeah.
Where has this been?
This sounds like how I feel.
This sounds exactly like my whole fucking life.
Yeah.
And so I listen to it, I'm reading these lyrics, and I'm like, why is this person so positive? Like, when we live in a world like this, what's...
Yeah, all you've experienced is not that.
Why is he still trying? And that's how I took it. I was like, why is he trying? Why is he trying to be a decent person in a place like this? You know? Like, that shit will get you killed. Mm. Obviously, in the big scream of things, he's from a different part of California than I was.
Orange County, you know?
Yeah. But I didn't know that, you know what I mean? Yeah. And I was like, I need more of this. Like, what is this? Oh, they're straight edge? Why?
Had you stopped drinking at this point already? Okay, so you had... Okay,
No, my drinking was getting worse at this point. My drinking had gotten real bad. We were ditching school, getting drunk at my friend's house. When my friends didn't want to ditch school, I would just go home and drink out of my stepdad's shit.
By yourself.
Yeah, and fill it with water.
And that's a whole other, like, you know...
Yeah,
like,
I dilute it with water just so he would know how much...
How much you'd had,
And so the drinking was really bad. The depression was really bad. But it was all just being just smeared with anger.
Yeah.
It was just anger, you know, at that point. And he was like, oh, let's go see them for my birthday. So this kid, Dustin, bought me tickets to my first Throwdown show. And at that show, it was Throwdown. And I remember the opening band. It was this band called Over My Dead Body.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Okay.
And I remember they did a Bad Brains cover.
Yep.
And I was like, oh, this is cool. I know who the Bad Brains are. Mm-hmm. And I remember circle pitting because I had only been going to like backyard punk and metal shows. And
yeah,
that's
so
only.
Oh, yeah. Cause you're a little like aware of this to an extent because you've been seeing it at least in the backyard.
Yeah,
you're
yeah.
Like, oh, yeah, I've kind of like, you know, yeah. I've kind of seen this before.
Yeah, yeah,
like,
yeah. It was just on a bigger scale because it was in a bigger venue.
Right.
And so I'm circle pitting and I get fucking wrecked in my face. Mm. So I'm sitting out the rest of the show and there's bands like Bleeding Through and A Death for Every Sin and like all these other bands I don't really care for that just didn't do anything.
Crazy that Over My Dead Body opened that because that's so such a different sound by comparison to the rest of that stuff.
Yeah. And this is 2001.
Okay. So you're like point. What, like 14?
14. I'm 14 years old. And I'm watching Throwdown, not involving myself because I just got fucking wrecked by a grown-ass man, right? I'm 14. And everything Keith Barney said and just the whole energy of this band was like, oh, they don't dress like metalheads. They don't dress like these gutter punk kids.
Yeah, they're wearing just like clothes. Like,
they're just wearing a pair of jeans and a fucking black hoodie,
which
is all I've been wearing in middle school. You know, when I hung out with all the goth kids.
Right.
Like, I just wore a black hoodie and some fucking jeans. And I'm just like, oh, I don't have to look like this. I don't have to look like these other, you know, I don't have to fit this spike hair mold or this, like, long hair metal vibe. Like, I don't have to. I can just be me, listen to this shit, and rock the fuck out.
Right.
You know?
Be yourself, yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, as corny as the song is, that Raise Your Fist song.
Song is awesome.
Song is hard.
Song is hard.
That is a hard fucking song.
Song kicks ass.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like something like that was vital to me.
Yeah.
It like, yeah, like straight edge and hardcore kind of came at me all at once, one directly right after the other. Mm-hmm. And it was the first time I was excited about being alive.
That's awesome.
And it's sad.
It is sad.
It's sad because when I talk to my therapist, she's like, can you tell me one good memory that doesn't involve music? And I fucking broke down, man.
Yeah.
I had nothing. I had absolutely nothing that didn't involve movies or music. Not a relationship, not a moment, not an accomplishment.
Yeah.
Like, the biggest accomplishment by 14 was a fucking kickflip.
Yeah, I mean,
that was the biggest accomplishment I ever had in my life.
You know, but from the perspective, it's like it would have been hard to accomplish anything because you had so much stacked up. You had so much stacked up against you, and you were constantly, whether it was, I mean, eventually physically, but I feel like even emotionally and just kind of like mentally, you were constantly battling, and like I feel or like having to like run away or like, you know, like regroup. And I feel like in that kind of setup, accomplishing anything is for anybody is super difficult.
You know? And it is.
Yeah. It wasn't your fault. So, it was what it was. And, you know, like hearing that, like, this is the moment where you felt happy for the first time is touching and incredible to me. Cause it's you finding, it's why I do this podcast. It's talking about the power of this music.
Absolutely.
And you find it right then, and it changes things for you in a good way.
Yeah, and it did. It opened the door to me wanting to actually play music. You know, me wanting to actually create something.
Yeah, because you haven't been, like, playing anything
prior to this.
Like, you know?
I had, like, somebody gave me a bass.
Yeah.
Only because they wanted me to be in their Weezer cover band. I fucking love Weezer.
Love Weezer. Blue Album's one of my favorite albums of all time.
We were called In the Garage because we never left.
Yeah, great song too.
Yeah, yeah. So we never left the garage.
Yeah.
But that was the furthest. You know, like, I was playing bass to like Weezer covers.
Right.
You know, but this was the first time where I was like, maybe I can write songs like these. You know, granted I'm 14, so all my riffs sucked, but it was still like the first time I've had confidence in thinking I could do something.
Yeah.
The first time I felt like I didn't have to be Jonathan Davis or Kurt Cobain, and that was the only kind of like character,
like some aggrandized rock person, some aggrandized metal person or something
I didn't have to be an icon to make music,
right?
You know what I mean? And then once I found bands like Throwdown, I did the thing where I checked out every band on that label.
Yep.
And every band CD that I got, I checked out all their thank yous.
Yes.
And I looked at all those bands and then kind of trickled my way back, realizing, oh, this all derived from hardcore punk.
Yeah.
This all came from somewhere. This didn't appear.
It's a lineage.
Now, there's history to this. Mm-hmm. You know, this isn't fucking emo where it just popped up.
Yeah, it just appeared. Yeah,
yeah, sure. Which is weird.
It really is.
Yeah. This has a history. There's a reason why people mosh the way they do. Styles, why they are. You know, New York had a style. D.C. had a style. Boston had a style. You know, Texas has a style. California has a style.
Love the regionality. Yeah. Yes.
Like, there's identity. And mm-hmm. it all doesn't sound the same. And I thought that was cool.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that was fucking awesome because a band like Throwdown could play with a band like Bane. A band like Marauder
mm-hmm.
could also be on the same bill as Turning Point.
Oh, for sure.
You know what I mean? Like, you had Youth of Today singing about straight edge and veganism, also while Madball plays two bands later, just shredding the fucking place to bits.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, there was so much diversity and acceptance. Yeah, people bicker. You get enough people in one room, people are going to butt heads. It's normal.
And especially in a type of music that is hinged on being emotionally charged.
Absolutely.
You know?
You think people going to hardcore shows are welcoming?
Yeah, I mean,
but like half of us spend our life pushing people we care about away.
Yeah. Or just feeling we don't fit in with anybody else.
Yeah.
So it's like, you know.
For the longest time, I went to hardcore shows by myself because I didn't go for friends.
Yeah.
And to this day, I don't go to hardcore shows to make friends.
No, it's not necessarily like a social thing.
Friends came from that.
Right, yeah.
You know, I had friends come from that.
That's what we talked about earlier. It's about music.
Absolutely.
And like what the music's about and everything. All the other stuff is periphery.
Yeah.
It's, you know, it's secondary.
Yeah. It's like you don't go for the potatoes and the greens.
Yeah.
You go for that fucking steak,
you go for the steak,
dude.
Baby. That's right.
Yeah. Those just happen to be great, great side
dishes.
They're
there,
pieces,
you know
what
right.
I mean? And they're good and they're delicious and mm-hmm. and they serve a purpose. But remember why you're there.
Yeah.
You know? And, you know, home life didn't get easier at 14.
Yeah.
You know, it didn't get easier for another 5 years till my father was incarcerated for manslaughter.
Mm.
Yeah, he went on a really bad drug binge, and then it cost somebody their life, and so he got manslaughter for that, and they gave him 10 to 12 years. I think they gave him 10, and he added 2 while he was in there. Just bad behavior.
Bad behavior.
Yeah, stuff like that. But I remember distancing myself from my family, which at this point, like, I feel bad about because I didn't want to leave my brother and my sister behind like that.
Yeah.
But I was so tired. I was so exhausted from everything that any chance I can go to a show, any chance I could spend the night at someone else's house, I was going to do it.
You get more autonomy at this point too.
Yeah. I knew how to survive.
Yeah.
I had a job at 16. You know, I've had a job ever since I was 16. You know what I mean? I've been homeless. You know, like, I've lived in garages. I've lived in couches. Like, it's like making ends meet on my own has never been difficult. You know what I mean? It's
you do out of necessity.
Yeah.
You know?
It's just how I run.
Right.
You know? So there's a lot of not regret, but definitely like there was neglect for my siblings and I feel bad about that. I did start taking my brother, you know, to hardcore shows as early as I possibly could. Like, you know, I think it's cool that my little brother was watching Mental when he was like 10, 11 years old.
That's sick.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, and not a lot of kids can say
no,
that.
No, they can't.
At least not a lot of kids his age can say that.
Definitely not.
You know, because I wish I was 10 and watching Warzone.
Oh, God, yeah.
You know, like I would have killed for that.
For sure.
And But hardcore became this huge piece. And, you know, I did a thing where I went from friend group to friend group because the first set of friends, they were all kind of like suburban kids, you know, from like a town nearby. But they all had cars, or like a handful of them had cars.
Yeah.
So that was me having access to shows.
Yeah, they can take you.
Yeah. I was like, oh, are you going to the show? Like, oh, yeah, we're going here. I was like, oh, sick. And like, can I go with you?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'd save my allowance. I'd steal my allowance, you know what I mean? Or whatever money I could to give my friends gas so I can save for a ticket.
Right.
You know? Yeah, I fell in and I
just, so during high school, prior to you like kind of like hitting 18, are you like playing any bands yet or anything? Or?
Nah, we started some shit. Never, you know, things just never left the garage.
Right.
I was more into just, really? I was into reading lyrics, moshing, and skating.
You've always been a very lyrical person. So it's and like this all makes sense as to why. Like, you know, like, because like your first experience with hardcore is hearing that Throwdown record and being like, why is this person saying the things that they're saying?
Yeah.
You know? And I feel like kind of the inquisitive nature of that, I feel like kind of factored into probably you being so lyrical later. So you're not playing anything in high school. Like what ends up happening, you know, like, well, when does your stepfather go away?
Right after high school, when I was 19. Okay. So in high school, between the ages of like 14, 15, 16, and 17, he's in and out of the house. He's probably doing like short time at like county jail for drug stuff and like all these things. There's a, still abuse, but he knows I don't give up anymore.
Yeah.
So he's hesitant now. Like, he hesitates. So it's better, and, you know. And
still not ideal.
It's still not ideal. And then I remember when I was 19, when he was on his really bad last bender, he was yelling at my mother, and I just got between her. I was like, please, just leave. He said, oh, it looks like you want to hit me. I was like, just go, man.
Yeah.
Just please, just leave us alone. He's in my face. And I just remember, he was like, well, why don't you just hit me? I just remember closing my eyes and closing my fucking fist and just giving absolutely everything. And I think this is when he knew he could no longer push me, because I knocked him out.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't knock him out completely because he was on the ground, but he was still like,
oh, there. Like there, yeah.
There. So he realized, oh.
This can happen, right?
This can happen now.
Yeah.
And 2 weeks later, he was really bad, really bad on meth. He was hallucinating and following people he didn't know, thinking it was my mother. And it all led up, you know, my mom was talking to him at my grandma's house. His mom at the door. My mom decided not to let him in the house. I was like, okay, I was getting ready for work. I was brushing my teeth.
You're right. How old?
I'm just turned 19.
Okay. All right. So this is like right around there. Okay.
Yeah. And I heard my mom scream while I was brushing my teeth. And it's that same just piercing sound. And I drop the toothbrush. I run to the kitchen. And he's doing something I've never seen him do. He's ripping her clothes off.
Mm.
So he's not hitting her. He's ripping her clothes off because I think he thought she was sleeping with someone else.
Okay.
Which is him probably just projecting, to be honest.
Yeah, to be real.
And he wanted to see if she had any marks on her and stuff like that.
Okay.
But like, he wasn't saying anything. He was just ripping her clothes off.
Yeah.
And he saw me see him. And I was locked in. So I'm chasing him, and he runs. And so I'm chasing him down our driveway, and the driveway has this wooden fence on it. And I remember just leaping and grabbing him by the back, and we both fall into the fence. The fence falls over completely. I'm probably like 200 pounds at this time now.
Yeah, you're like a more sized person.
At that point, I'm fully grown at this point. And I remember choking him and crying, and I'm pretty sure I just snapped, and I just squeezed every ounce of life out of him I possibly could. And once again, my mother, my uncle was there, his brother-in-law, mm-hmm. and my grandmother were doing everything they could to pull me off of him. And he was turning purple, and I was sobbing. I just kept saying, I'm done.
Yeah.
I'm done.
It's been almost 20 years at that point.
Yeah.
Like, you're an adult man. That, you know, it's just like it's over. You know?
Yeah. And so I stop. And he takes off. He runs away.
Yeah.
2 days later, detectives come, ask looking for him. We find out he accidentally got into a scuffle with a drug dealer and cost the drug dealer his life. And all the evidence was there. He doesn't remember any of it.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, he was so spun
mm-hmm.
that he had, I think he was up for like 6-7 days.
Damn.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's that meth, you know? Yeah, like,
meth is a motherfucker.
Yeah,
dude.
Keeps you up.
Yeah. And for the first time, I felt like I could breathe for a minute.
Yeah.
Like I could sit down and take this one. I could sit this one out for a bit.
Yeah. He's gone, you know? And you haven't experienced that really much of your whole life.
No. And then... That's honestly, that was right after that was I started actually getting closer to people. I got a girlfriend. I lost my virginity at 19.
Mm-hmm.
I was kind of like opening up to people at shows more because I was just that kid that would just show up, mosh, and leave.
Yeah.
You know, I'd sing along to every band and I'd just disappear as soon as the band was over.
Right.
You know what I mean? And I started bands with other kids, you know.
Yeah, what was like? What were some of your first bands like? You know, like
I used to play in this band called Looking Up.
Okay, what was it like?
Turning Point.
Okay,
it was like Turning Point, but more screechier vocals.
Gotcha. So, like, what year was this? I was 19, 20.
I was like 20 years old, maybe 21. I was like 20 years old.
So like
2005. Yeah, 2006. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
We did a couple tours up the West Coast. No one really gave a shit about it. I just liked playing.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't give a fuck. You're having a great time.
I had a guitar. You know. I was jamming, man.
That first time on the road is just, there's no other experience like it.
Yeah, there's nothing. It's addicting.
Mm-hmm. As we can see where you are now.
Yeah, it's severely addicting. And I'm so used to being in so many places so fast that it was natural at that point. And that was short-lived. And I started a band called Dogpile, like, in 2007. And we just had a demo. And once again, our singer quit. So we decided to write new songs, same members, and different name. So we called it Rotting Out.
Ah, okay. Yeah.
And we didn't have a singer, so we decided to ask our last singer to sing in this new band, which was the same lineup, just newer songs.
Okay.
And so he's like, yeah, okay, because he thought people would take it more seriously with a more serious name. Because the last band was named, like, Dogpile.
Yeah, and was she, yeah, like.
So it was corny, you know, it was like, whatever, like, we didn't care, we just wanted to play music.
I get it.
And the songs were a little bit more well-written. And so he was interested. We did a demo, and we did a 7-inch with him. And we got a lot of good hype right away, actually, which I was like, oh, this is cool. You know what I mean? Like,
this is like 2000, what?
Seven. Seven? Still.
Okay.
Yeah. And... No, this is now 2008, late 2009.
Gotcha. And you like living with your mom at the time? Or
I was living everywhere.
Okay, you're just like, you're out on your own, you're just around, like, yeah, working and playing.
I was with my mom, sometimes I was living in a garage.
Gotcha.
At my friend's house.
Just want to get the lay of the land, kind of.
Yeah. Really, like, at that point, I didn't have to worry about my stepfather anymore.
Yeah.
So everybody was just kind of like,
you feel free.
Thing. Yeah, you know? Absolutely. And played a couple Sound and Furies, one of those earlier ones. And
because it started, what, 7?
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah. Our bass player quit, so I moved to bass, and we got a guitar player, which is Tank. And then we wrote Street Prowl. We're like, sick. We're writing a full length.
And you had 2 7-inches, I want to say, prior.
We had the demo, which was turned into a 7-inch.
Okay, that's it.
And
that's
then we
it.
Had Vandalized, which was a 5-song 7-inch.
Because I remember, this is like 07, 08. I remember y'all coming through here in 09.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
And, but it was with the other singer.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, that sounds very, very accurate.
Right.
And we wrote Street Prowl. Okay. All the music was done. I was stoked. I was like, cool, time to go to the studio. Our singer comes in and he's like, I'm quitting. I was like, again, sick. Cool. Nice. I was like, what's wrong? And he's like, oh, I think he had like a midlife crisis at 25.
I've seen it happen.
Yeah. So I was like, I didn't get it. You know what I mean? Because from my vantage point and my life that I've lived up to that point, the shit he was dealing with,
it's nothing
to me, didn't seem severe in any way. Though I'm like, why are you tripping?
Yeah.
You know, but everybody, you know.
Relative, I guess.
It's it's all just relevant to the person, to the time and how people take things in the way they do. So I was like, oh, cool. We need to find a new singer. I was like, this is going to suck because nobody likes when bands change singers.
It's tough.
It's really shitty.
Yeah.
And this could probably just end this band, and that's fine. We'll just start another band and do whatever. Mm-hmm. I don't care. And I was looking. I was like, oh, what about this dude? What about that guy? And our drummer, George, at the time, he was just like, well, what about you? I was like, well, what do you mean? He's like, well, like, you could probably sing, right? I was like, I don't know, man. I had done, like, guest spots at like half hard gigs because Pat would like always, you know, me and him are close, so he'd always be like, hey, do this part. I was like, oh, cool, yeah, cool, I'll just rock it. Like, I don't really have to do anything. It was a half hard show.
Yeah, you just
hold the fucking microphone, mosh on stage a little bit, stage dive, and that was about it.
You did the guest spot, there it is.
Yeah, and that was it. That was like 30 seconds, and he was all basing it off of that. He's like, oh, yeah, the crowd was really into you. He was like, no, the crowd was really into the song,
into half heart.
Yeah, they were really into half heart. And I was like, fuck it. Let's see what happens. Like, what's the worst that could happen is everything that I expect happens, where people go, oh, this is weird. This isn't running out.
I don't like this new person. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Which is okay.
Sure.
Cool. I don't know what happened. I don't know what I did that people preferred, at least the majority of people preferred it this way.
I mean, I'll tell you this way. From my standpoint, at that time, I knew Riding Out existed. I maybe heard like a song. I had like heard like some Vandalized songs, you know, like whatever at the time. But I was always like, this is fine. And then when you came into the picture, and I remember seeing you at that show we like talked about at the beginning of the podcast, I was like, oh, I like this way more. I was like, what's... I had paid such little attention prior, because I remember exactly when I went up to you and talked to you. I was like, I like this like way more than I remember the last time I saw him. And I remember coming up to you and we talked for a second. You're like, oh, I'm like the new singer. That came up in conversation. I was like, oh, well, like you're sick, you know, whatever. And I remember I started paying attention to you all after you became the vocalist. Prior to that, I hadn't paid attention with
so much. A couple people said something similar to that. Like, where it was like, oh, it was just kind of rotting out, was just kind of background music to some people.
Mm-hmm. That's how it was for me. Yeah.
When I started singing, something just fell together.
Yep.
Like, things just kind of fell in place. And it was, you know, it did give me the confidence that I kind of needed to, like, okay, to kind of, like, go harder.
Yeah.
But in reality, I was terrified. Because I put some things out there that I was, like, lyrically, where I was just like, I don't know how people are going to take this.
You're very personal lyrically.
Yeah.
Very, like, way more so than I feel a lot of hardcore people are, like, willing to be right now. But you are.
And it's kind of a bummer, though.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Because I think if you're writing songs, they should be personal.
They should. Especially in this type of music.
Even if they're political, they should still be personal. There should still be a background as to why you feel that way.
Yeah.
Yeah, why you feel so strong. I don't care if you're screaming about veganism or straight edge. Tell me why.
Yeah.
Like, I want to know why. What happened?
That made you this way.
That made you this way. I'm not going to say it's right or wrong. I just want to know.
Mm-hmm. It's like the same. It's the same question you asked when you first heard that Throwdown record. Why is this person like this?
Why are you mad?
Yeah. Like, I don't care that you are mad. I want to know why you're mad.
I love that you're mad.
Yeah.
Because I'm mad.
Now tell me why you're mad.
Yeah, now tell me why you're mad.
Yeah.
You know? So I put a lot into that record personally, and I think that needed to happen. I think I needed to expose things, to let some things go loosely, and I don't know, that just kind of started it all.
So this is like 2010 that you started singing?
2011.
11?
Street okay. Prowl came, I started singing in 2010.
10, yeah.
And the record came out in 2011. Okay,
it comes out in 2011. That was 6131 at the time?
6131.
Okay, they're big for California in that time period.
Yeah.
And just in general. But, all right, so, you know, you guys start touring a lot, off of that.
Yeah, because we're young.
Yeah.
At least at the time, what was I? I was, 24.
Yeah.
So I was like, holy shit, that was 10 years ago. Yeah. Almost 10.
Yeah, right there.
Yeah, I was 24, 25. So I was like, fuck it. I'm basically homeless. Why not?
Why not? Yeah, why not just be on the road? And this is you, Carlos?
Me, Carlos. When I moved to vocals, Benji played bass.
Okay.
Moved to bass.
Yep.
I put him on his bass. And Tank had already been on guitar.
So you had the same lineup for a really similar lineup for a long time. That's cool.
It's difficult when you have to fill in people.
Yeah.
Because it's like, I know some dudes, like, right now our drummer is this dude, Josh. He's filling in for our original drummer because he has a child now.
Okay.
And so, you know, he's doing adult shit, you know.
Yeah.
Making money and providing for his family. You know what I mean? Like, and so
at a certain point it's okay. You know, it's okay.
That's okay. Priorities change, man.
Yeah, exactly.
You're a fucking adult. Now you have a whole other life depending on you. No one depends on me.
Yeah.
I don't have kids. You know what I mean?
Neither. Like, I'm just doing this. I'm chilling.
Yeah, I'm just hanging out and, you know, I don't need to add anything more to my plate that I don't really want to.
Me either.
But it was difficult, transitioning to a new drummer because we've had the same drummer for fucking ever. So we're just like, okay, things are weird. Like, something feels different, but the songs sound fine. But something feels
different. But the dynamic is just...
The dynamic's a little different.
No, they're a little different.
It's just, I don't know. We didn't expect to play shows ever again after, 2016.
Yeah, so 10, you're in it. You guys are touring a lot.
2011, Street Prowl comes out.
Street Prowl comes out. You know, that hits crazy. Like, you know, I remember, seeing killer shows of y'all here, on Street Prowl. I remember you were a band that was also, willing to, kind of cross a line of playing with different, kind of on the tour you guys are on right now. Where a lot of bands would be these types of bands aren't really this pop punk tour or whatever, or this metalcore tour or whatever is not really for me to play.
Yeah.
I know some bands that would be like that, but you guys were always the band that was on the we're going to show hardcore to these other people kind of thing. And I remember distinctly, I mean, you do that now and you were doing that then.
Yeah. My whole reasoning behind that is, how many of us went to a show where some band was on radio that to check out, and then the opening band just set it off more.
Yeah.
And you're like, who is this band? And then that brought you into this other world.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so if I'm playing with the story so far and we're opening and some kid goes, holy shit, what was that?
I like this more than what I even
this
came
makes
here.
More yeah. sense to me.
To me, yes.
This kid hadn't found hardcore, so he kind of found something in the realm of it to the side.
Mm-hmm. And easier to find, sure.
Easier to find, more accessible. Mm-hmm. And then hardcore shows up, and he goes, there you go.
Yeah. This is what I needed.
Where have you been?
Right.
I've been looking for you, you know. And they go there. I don't give a fuck if we're his favorite band or not.
Mm-hmm.
But if I could be that bridge for this kid to find bands like Cro-Mags or even more relevant bands, you know, bands like Regulator, Knock Loose, or, you know, just like these more appropriate younger bands that probably is more suitable to him, his peers.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I don't care if you like my band because it had two catchy songs and it had a cool mosh part, but if it led you to Downpressor or
something else,
like, you know, Brace War or Youth of Today, fuck yeah.
Cool.
My job is fucking done.
You've educated.
Yeah, that's all I want. I just want to open the door and be like, hey, look, you can walk through there if you want.
Yeah.
If you like what's on the other side, you can go right through there.
And that is a great standpoint to have, as a great position to hold, as to be sort of like not like forcing someone's hand, but be, like you said, opening the door and being like, hey, this exists. If you're into it, we're kind of here to be the messengers of what this is. And if you're into it, cool. If you're not, not a big deal. Doesn't bother us.
That's why I'm pretty adamant about keeping a very more traditional sound when it comes
to playing hardcore. Very, and especially in a time period where I feel like people kind of go more to like extremes, you know, like they'll go like super heavy or something like that. Or they'll go like kind of like lo-fi to a point that it's like almost sort of like alienating, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know what I'm talking
little,
about.
Little elitist.
Oh, yeah, you like nose up in the air, like, you know. Yeah. And like I'm down for like both, but it's like you guys are like definitively a hardcore band. You're right? Hardcore band. Like, you know, it's like you're not necessarily like full on like basement hardcore punk. You're not like slick, like, you know, like metalcore heavy metal band like on the other end of the spectrum. You are right there in the middle pulling, like you're a traditional hardcore band.
And we're on a tour with right now with the Acacia Strain, Creeping Death, Chamber, and Fuming Mouth.
Right.
We sound nothing
like
these bands. So when we hit the stage, we're gonna stand out like a sore thumb. I know what I look like.
Yeah.
I know I'm a bigger guy.
Right.
You know, and I know my energy is a little bit more aggressive than most. So it might turn some heads.
Yeah.
And if they go, wait, why is this band on here? And maybe they'll just be like, well, I'm glad they are.
I mean, I feel like now, maybe more than ever, the younger showgoer is a lot more open than when you and I were younger.
Oh, yeah. There's a lot of, like, oh, what the fuck?
Yeah, when I was younger, there was a lot of, like, that's not a real band, like, you know, or whatever, like, this band's not hardcore, or, like, this band's not punk, a lot of that. Mm-hmm. Whereas I feel like now, you know, like, people that are kind of the same age as you and I, like, years ago, are not really doing that as much. They're more like... They're more looking for like, they don't go into things as much expecting to not fuck with things. It's more like the opposite, where they're like, oh, I've heard about this, cool, I can't wait to see it, you know, kind of thing. Like, which is good.
We've had the thing where like, oh, I heard about you guys, but watching you was something different.
Yeah, which I can imagine for someone that hasn't seen Rotting Out being very much so that way.
Like, oh, yeah, I came across your Spotify, and some of the songs were whatever, but I saw you guys, and it was more than what I expected.
Yeah, you were like I said before we got in here, is like you guys are such a live experience.
Yeah.
You know?
And to me, that's what hardcore is. It's the live experience.
The most important thing about hardcore is the live show.
Yeah, it is hardcore. Mm-hmm. That's where it is. You can, I don't care how many fucking records you got, or how long your fucking list of MP3 downloads is on your computer, or how many fucking videos you've seen on YouTube. If you aren't in that room, you're not experiencing it.
Not part of the scene.
And you're not part of the fucking scene, dude. Mm-hmm. I don't care how much shit you order from these bands.
Doesn't matter.
Does not matter.
Like the most hardcore person in the room could be someone that doesn't have a band shirt on. It's if they're experiencing the show and having a good time, or just at least being there, being present, like that's real. Like, you know, like you can't watch a video online of a hardcore show and be like, I'm experiencing hardcore. That is just isn't.
No,
you're
no.
watching it. You're but watching you're not something. Experiencing. You're not experiencing.
No, because I could watch the same video.
Yeah.
And I go, it felt nothing like that.
Yeah.
No, it felt nothing. I'm watching this video of, whatever. Have Heart at Sound and Fury for the sake of the conversation.
Sure.
And I am watching the video online and I go, oh yeah, that was cool. It did not feel like it feels right now.
Yeah.
It was 1,000 times more amplified
than what
in every
seeing.
Sense of the word.
Mm-hmm.
The hair on your neck stands up. Your ears are pierced. These lyrics you haven't sang in ages all of a sudden come right back to you.
Yeah, like you just like you remember every single one of them.
It was like riding a bike again, and it was nostalgia in almost every sense of the word, and you felt it in your fucking gut.
Yeah, you can't get that from a video.
I can't watch this on YouTube because it doesn't feel like that.
Yeah,
it's not the same, and I don't care how long your fucking merch list is. Yeah. I don't give a fuck what type of negative shirt you're wearing. Like, if you're not at the show, you're not part of the scene, my dude.
Right.
It's as simple as that, you know? Like, promote a show, book a show, join a band.
Oh, I mean, this genre of music, more than almost any other genre of music, is the one that is one of the easiest to be hands-on in and to create your own personal power in. You know, you can do something like we're doing right now. You can interview people. You can make music. You can put shows together. There's so many options, you know.
If you don't like what you hear, even if it's out of my mouth, if you don't like what I'm saying, mm-hmm. do something. Start a band. Write what you want to listen to. You know, create what you want to see. You know, don't wait for it because you're going to be 35 and it never showed up.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I wanted to see bands that sounded like a West Coast hardcore band.
Yeah.
I grew up on Suicidal Tendencies and Black Flag and like these style of bands. And to me, those were still hardcore bands, you know. And I just wanted a little bit of the aggression hardcore has to offer mixed in with that. I wasn't going to sit on my ass and wait for it.
Wait for it to happen. You made it happen.
I had to make it happen.
Mm-hmm.
Because I knew if somebody did make it happen, I wasn't going to like it because they weren't going to do it right.
They're going to do it your way.
They weren't going to do it the way I like it. That's right. And it's simple. And that's why I tell everybody, dude, I don't give a fuck if you like my band or not. Start whatever it is you want to listen to.
Start what you want to hear.
Yeah.
So you guys when does the second LP come out?
Actually, this is our third LP. The Wrong Way came out in 2000.
Yeah, that's what I was asking. I was like, when did The Wrong 13. Way come out?
Oh, The Wrong Way came out 2013.
13, okay.
And that was, in my opinion, rushed.
Hey, sophomore LP, hard. Hard to do.
Yeah.
Especially after you've had a first LP that hit so well.
I'm starting to realize that.
Following up, I find this to be universal. It's like having that second LP hit as hard as the first one for a band of any size is very difficult.
And I didn't realize that.
Yeah. Oh, no, I don't think anybody does when they're doing it.
Yeah.
You know? I don't think anybody, when you're doing it, you're like, we got it. We're gonna top the one prior, and it's hard.
So we pushed that. We toured on that a bit. And we did more diverse tours, Ghost Inside, Story So Far, things like that. And also hardcore tours in there. We did like a Suburban Scum tour, an Expire tour.
I remember that. Yep.
We did like a Terror Bane tour, stuff like that. Mm-hmm. A couple European tours, South American tours, Australian tours.
Been all over world style.
We did an EP in 2015.
I do remember that. Yeah,
it was the Reckoning EP. It was just three songs.
Mm-hmm.
At that point, my personal life was out of control. I was experiencing things I never thought I would experience. You know, when you're in love, you're in the thick of it. Right. You're in the thick of vulnerability, and you just kind of,
you throw yourself at it.
I chucked myself at it, you know. And me being a very bad codependent, not realizing it at the time.
Probably heard it from my mom.
Yeah. And I was avoiding a lot of red flags. Mm. You know, there's a lot of signs that were there that I just, things will get better. Had a couple friends die that same year. A lot of internal issues with the band. I think we were all just tired of being around each other.
Been around each other for a long time.
Yeah. My love life was shit. So it was a big year where in March of 2015, we played a show in Texas. And I just remember telling my band, I'm going home.
You're done?
I'm done. I'm going home. I don't know what it is. I don't know if it's circumstances. I don't know if it's just now or here. I don't like doing this. This is not fun right now. And so I walked away. We played what was supposed to be a last show in December 2015.
I remember the videos, yes.
And another bad time in my life. And then 6 months after that, I was incarcerated.
Right. Yeah. Yes.
So,
and I remember you are you go away for how long?
18 months.
18 months. I remember like writing a letter to Gina in that time period.
Yeah.
To help out with the
I'm very grateful for that.
Oh, of course. Yeah. No, I'd do it again. It was the like potential deportation or
yeah. So in the state or in the United States, if you're a U.S. permanent resident, if you violate the law with any type of drug trafficking or drug possession,
yeah,
you definitely can get deported.
Oh, and you came over. That's right. You came over when you were three. So
I wasn't
like,
a citizen.
You weren't a citizen. Yep,
yeah, I was a permanent resident.
Yeah.
No one ever told me that once I turned 18, I could apply for citizenship.
Ah, yeah. I see.
So I could have nipped that in the butt real early, but they sure definitely told me I could sign up for war at 18.
I'm sure they did.
Yeah. And because of that, I had a lot of letters turned in, which I was very, very overwhelmed and grateful because, you know, I made the choices.
Yeah.
You know, and I had, you know, there was repercussions to that. And, you know, but honestly, that was probably the best thing to ever happen to me.
Really?
Going to prison was the best thing to ever happen to me. It made me, I don't want to say reevaluate my life. It made me finally look at things that I was afraid to look at internally for the longest time.
Well, yeah, I mean, like, you don't have anything distracting you, you know,
no.
And life's on pause.
Life is on pause, and I got a therapist in prison, and we definitely dug into some shit I did not want to dig into. I got diagnosed with a couple things that I didn't want to accept at first, and that made me very depressed because on top of the life I already lived, oh, now there's things I have to live with.
Yeah.
Oh, cool. Sick. Like, it's like this sweet.
I mean, with a childhood like yours, man, it's it would be pretty wild if you got out unscathed.
And I, honestly, I thought I did.
Yeah.
As naive as I was, right. I thought, holy shit, I got away. I got away. Little did I know, I had a fucking gift wrapped, fucking souvenir.
Yeah.
You know, and so that was hard to take. It was hard to process at first, but once I did, I started seeing things a little bit more differently when it came to who I was and why I was doing things and why I act. Very, very, very self-aware on a big scale now. So
it's good.
It's very good.
Yeah.
But it's unfortunate because now that I know what's wrong, turning these things off is a lot. I'm literally trying to change the last 30 years of my life in the past 2 years. Like, yeah. I'm trying to unlearn so many habits, so many flaws, so many insecurities that I've built and carried, and terrible, like, thinking patterns, you know, that I have to try to unlearn now.
Right.
And I'm too stubborn, so I want it now when I want it. You know, I want it all done now. Oh, that's how you fix it? Cool. Let's fucking get to it. And that's not the reality. You know, I have to understand that there's a process to undoing all this
time.
Fucking mess.
You know.
And I get impatient with myself.
So do I.
But I can't go back to being the way I was. I can't go back to thinking how I do. Some days it creeps up on me. Some days it's very loud. Some days it's not there.
Yeah. But I mean, as my father always told me, he said, a problem well stated is a problem half solved. And so it's like, you know, you're aware. You know that where there's issues.
I like that.
Yeah. Oh, my dad, so many things I feel like he would fuck with was
that's cool.
What else he would say to me? Kind of what you're talking about, doing things like for yourself when I was younger, he would always say, if it's to be, it's up to me. If I want anything to happen, you have to do it on your own. You can't wait for other people to do it.
Yeah, you can't.
So a lot of things you're talking about. But yeah, that was one I always remember, is that when anybody's in kind of a hard place, that's the first thing I tell them. I was like, well, if you know what's going on, you at least know that there's an issue.
Yeah.
Because when you don't know there's an issue, that's when.
Yeah. Because for the longest time, things that I felt, I didn't know where they were coming from.
Yeah.
I didn't know why I would shake when I think about certain things. I didn't know why I was fighting tears every day when I just was thinking back on things.
Right.
I didn't know why I had trouble breathing when I spoke about my mother, you know, or I don't know why I was so terrified to talk about what happened in the shelter.
Yeah.
You know, or why I felt embarrassed or ashamed or disgusting. I didn't know. I didn't know what these feelings were. And now that I do, and there's just an actual term for it.
Yeah.
It was like, fuck, man. Now I have this whole new set of problems. I can't treat it that way because it's always been there.
Yeah.
So now these problems just have a name.
Now you're aware of them. And you know.
Yeah. And it's easier to manage.
As G.I. Joe says, knowing is half the battle. So yeah. Same thing.
No. Yeah. Knowing is half the battle. And it's brought a calmness to me.
Right.
And so coming out of prison, everything was different. Everything was different in the sense of my friendships, my priorities, the way I treat myself, the way I talk to myself, especially.
Mm-hmm.
How I go into relationships now, you know, like knowing not to give all myself to an individual and let my emotions be managed by one person.
Yeah.
Things like that.
It's
like
good. That's good. There's some people that spend their entire lives never learning that.
Yeah. And the fucked up thing is, like, once you see it, you can't unsee it because now you start to see it in everybody.
Mm-hmm.
And now you want to be that guy to be like, hey, dude, this is what you're doing because I know, because I've been there and because da, 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 but you can't do that. No.
People have to learn on their own sometimes.
I will not rob anybody of a hard lesson.
Ah, very smart.
Yeah, I will not do that because it did so much to me,
mm-hmm.
and I am very grateful for it. People are like, I'm sorry you went to prison. I'm like, I am not, absolutely not sorry I went to
That's
prison.
That's good.
I just wished it was packaged differently. But you know what? But it had to come.
Yeah.
You know, and it was important. And I thought no one gave a shit about rotting out. Had no interest. I didn't care. I thought kids fell off with the way music is now and like kind of like the style that's a little bit more popular amongst the younger kids. Wow, that makes me sound old.
I mean, hey, I talk about it all the time. You know, it's like what people my age like get into now in regards to like heavier music, hardcore related music, whatever, it's like so alien to like what like I was listening to when I was younger. But the thing is, it's like, I'm like, you know what? It's like, I'm a 30-year-old man. If what I'm really into is, and like what like a 15-year-old's really into are like exactly the same thing, something is wrong. If I've been into the same thing as like a bunch of 30-year-olds when I was 15 or vice versa, something would have been wrong. So it's okay, you know?
Yeah,
it's
okay. That's definitely true. And so we played Sound and Fury, and they asked us to headline, and I was like, why the fuck would we headline Sound and Fury? What the fuck is your problem, dude? Yeah. Like, I think it's going to be good. I think a lot of kids give a shit. I was like,
Martin?
Riley.
Yeah.
Riley. And I was like, I don't know, man. I just didn't have that confidence in my band. Mm-hmm. And what sucks is sometimes I still don't. I still don't see what some other people see. You know, we were talking about it in the band. We're like, we always kind of expect a show to be bad. And when it's not, we're like, oh, that was pretty cool.
Oh, that was great. Yeah.
That was a pretty cool show. You know what I mean?
Might be a better way to look at it. Because I'm the opposite where I'm like, oh, this is going to be great. And I play something that may not be that great. And I'm like, ah, damn.
Oh, that was cool. Like, damn, that was actually pretty fun. I didn't expect that. And, but I also don't see my band as the same caliber as other people see it, I suppose.
Mm. Well, you're in it. You're up close and personal. So you look at it differently.
And then I decided to ask Carlos. I was like, let's do a record.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, yeah. And I was like, let's not tell anybody about it. And let's just do it. And then, but I'm like, fuck, we owe Pure Noise a record. So I was like, okay. So I hit up Pure Noise. I was like, hey, we're going to do this. If you guys still want to be a part of it, that'd be cool. If you don't, I get it. But we're going to do this nonetheless.
Yeah.
They're like, we want in. I was like, okay.
Oh, I'm sure.
Okay,
yeah.
Cool. I don't know when it's going to be done. I don't know how long it's going to take us. I just know it's done when we're happy.
Right.
And we started in July of 2019. And we finished the record in January 15th.
Okay, so like about a month ago, well, a little bit over, a little month and a half.
And the record is done.
Ronan. Great.
And I
love the name.
Haven't been happier.
Awesome.
Than I have good. Since Street Pro came out.
That's good to hear.
Yeah.
That's good to hear. And I know a lot of people that have liked the singles too, that have been like, you know, releasing and everything. Which is, and it's kids that saw you, or people that saw you ages ago, you know, that I've seen like people being like, oh yeah, I like these new songs. So it probably reminds them of Street Prowl music.
Yeah. You know? The weird part is there's kids that are too young to have seen us.
Oh, for sure.
Like one of the dudes on tour was like, hey, I've been wanting to see you since I was 16, but you guys stopped coming around. Like, you guys stopped being a band.
Yeah.
And so this is cool that I get to see mm-hmm. these songs. I'm like, holy shit. There's a whole, I didn't realize that
whole generation.
Right before we broke up, there's this generation of kids that was expecting to see us.
Yeah.
That mm-hmm. they were like anticipating, oh, I'm going to go to Warped Tour. I'm going to see Rotting Out.
Yep.
There's like this weird hype, I suppose, or something like it. For kids to see Rotting Out at Warped Tour.
Yeah, because you get to see a band that's more of like a raw like nature in an environment that's way more slick. And which is like always like for me, if like on a different scale, whenever I would see like a band like you, or I would see Twitching Tongues do this at a time period too, or something of that nature, or a TUI, it'd be like them, Rush the Package is nothing like them, but it's a package I know is going to bring a lot of people. So like, oh, cool. I can wild out like crazy to this band and in front of a ton of people that have no idea what's coming. And I feel like that would maybe like for like a Warped Tour scenario, there's a certain appeal there where it's like, oh, I'm going to be in this like big setting, but I get to see this band play in front of like a ton of people. You know, so I get that. I'm sure there was a ton of kids that were like, wow, I can't wait to see that kind of band in this kind of setting.
Yeah, and it never happened.
Yeah.
So when Rotting Out played in 2018 at Sound of Fury, it was overwhelming. Mm. I was like, holy shit.
Yeah. Looked crazy.
Kids that missed us on top of kids that had never had the opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
And then, okay, we're just going to play little gigs here and there and whatnot. And then... Knock Loose offered us the tour, and it was right when we were talking about writing a record.
So oh, like, the one the last fall.
Yeah, so I was oh, this kind of makes sense now. Like mm-hmm. this is all kind of oddly falling into place.
Yeah, same label. Like
same label. Knock Loose is on the same label. Mm-hmm. Stick to Your Guns was on the same label. Mm-hmm. And we had just talked about writing a record, so I was like, oh, this is all lining up.
It's a good way to get in front of people. Yeah.
So we sat down at the diner I've been going to since I was like 7. And I told the dudes, I was like, if we're going to do this, we're going to do this full time. If not, say no, and I'll turn this shit down right now.
Yeah.
But I was like, I'm not going to dip my foot in, quit my job for fucking 2 months just so I could come back and
try to find a new one or something. Yeah.
I was like, if we're going to do this, we're going to do this. Mm-hmm. And we're going to do it right. And, okay. Everybody's like, all right.
Sure.
Let's see what happens.
Yeah.
I was like, don't expect things to be as nice as they were before, where, like, we had a lot of support and stuff like that. I was like, we're doing this because it's fun now.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's fun again.
Did you say that prior to the tour or after the tour?
Prior.
I'm sure you were welcome. I'm sure like going on that tour right after that conversation is like, well, support seems like it's there.
Yeah.
Those shows are big.
Yeah, it was big, and it was just like a whole world of people that love Knock Loose that mm-hmm. were like, who's Rotting Out?
You see, and like with kind of what we talked about earlier, I sonically I can't get into that band. It's just not for me. Like, but like, you know, again, they're younger, and that's what young people are into.
Yeah.
And you know, that's the way it should be.
This is their scene.
But their fan base, unlike when you and I were that age, are so open to sounds. They're just excited to be at that show in general.
Yeah.
And they're like, I just can't wait to see every band on they're so open to it, which is cool.
And then we wrote like 17 songs.
Wow.
We narrowed it down to 10.
Good. I'm about to say.
A hardcore record should not be longer than 20, 25 minutes.
Fuck no. Yeah.
No. I'm with you on that. I refuse to push the 30-minute mark. Fuck that. Yeah. And it was probably the most emotional record I've done. Just
that's saying life. A lot.
Yeah. So there was things I did on Street Proud where I was like, oh, if I tell these people a little bit of my story, then I don't really got to touch this shit over here that I've been holding out on. I don't really got to go into the basement if I just show them the old family photos.
Right.
We don't got to go to the basement. We don't got to go that deep.
You get the surface. You don't got to go underneath of it.
I was like, okay, they know things were a little ugly.
Yeah.
That's as much as they get.
Right.
And so on this record, I was like, what's the point? What's just put it out there.
Yeah. Throw it all out, man.
Throw it all out there. And it was hard. It was difficult.
For sure.
Because it was like, oh, holy shit. I didn't realize this still carried this much weight when I'm putting pen to paper. Mm. But I don't regret a single word.
Good.
I don't regret anything.
People will resonate with that.
It's a fun record musically.
Yeah, I like the music on that last track that came out.
It's a dark one lyrically.
Yeah. Good dichotomy. Like it.
Yeah. And I mean, it's just, and it's a very, very personal record, you know, because obviously if whoever's listening doesn't know what Ronin is a masterless samurai who basically is just roaming.
Yep.
With no.
No lord.
No lord. No nothing. And so.
No fiefdom.
And, you know. And I related to that at a very young age.
Oh, you've always been, you know, place to place, traveling around.
Bingo.
You know, like on your own.
And then not only that, Bedard from Bane sent me Lone Wolf and Cub
while
I was in prison.
Great comics.
Great comic.
Great comic.
And obviously what Shogun's Assassin was based on.
Yep.
So I had this in prison. I was like, This is all coming full circle.
I like love anything like samurai, like Japanese culture, anything like that. It's like you've been in my house. You've seen like big stuff like everything like that. Like that is, I am so into all that.
So it's oddly all came back full circle. And it only made sense that was what I called the record.
Yeah, when I heard the title, I was like, especially for me, I was like, nice. I was like, I fuck with that.
Yeah. So I was excited and it's definitely I'm really excited for people to hear it.
When's it supposed to be out?
April 10th.
Okay. So soon. So a little bit over a month.
A little bit over a month.
This will be out on Friday. Yeah. So, right.
I just got word that we might have it on this tour.
Oh, you have physical copies?
Yeah.
Oh, killer.
Not
so,
yet, but we might have
if
it.
And this tour goes on for about a month,
April 10th.
Okay, so the tour stops and like on April 10th on the release date. So if you're, you know, like this to be a full month in front of everybody that's listening to this, if you're seeing Rotting Out in your city, you might have the record. So pick one up. But that takes us to right now. So we're in the current and, you know, you guys are killing it and you guys like, you know, I'm sure I have great plans for the future after the record comes out and everything.
Hopefully.
I imagine it'll probably be fine.
I'll let you listen to it.
I do want to hear it.
Yeah.
I do want to hear it. Yes. I'd love to hear it. So that takes us to now. And, you know, what a life you've lived.
I will say it wasn't always the best.
No.
But it was never boring.
That's true. Do you want to leave anybody with anything?
It's okay to fall.
It's okay to fall. Thank you, everyone, for listening to Form of Passion, episode 21. You will hear us again later in the month.